So, and look at me, or look at him. Don't look at the camera. Initial stuff. So who are you?
So I'm Joe Smith. I'm a technical evangelist for Vista. And we're here over at the MSN buildings talking to the guys who make Outlook Express, who's looking to help clients, new features for Vista.
Very cool. And so who's in the room here?
Yes. I'm Brian Starbuck, and I'm the dev lead for Outlook Express, which we now have a new name, which is Windows Mail. The name went final. So I'll show you pieces of the Windows Mail is dead.
Very cool.
Oh, I'm Lee. I'm a tester with the mail team.
Very cool.
I'm Chuck Wall. I'm a dev on the mail team.
Awesome.
Yep.
So the Outlook Express team lives.
Yes, we sure do. We're newly created as of about a year ago, and so we have a lot of people that have joined and got really interested in email, and so we're...
Now I see a list of MVPs on your screen behind you.
Yes.
And I used to be one of those MVPs. I was MVP for 5 years, and I remember every summit we would be banging on, what are you guys going to do with Outlook Express? Well, are you going to fix our newsgroup experience?
Yeah.
They're still banging.
Yeah. They
yeah.
Need that.
I have to bang the drum. You know? I mean, I still got MVP blood in me. You know? Like,
yep.
They can't make me stop.
Yeah. We know and love our MVPs, and this is especially true with OE because they have so many issues that they have from long ago that we just need to come back and get through. So some of those you'll see here today.
Yeah. The reason the MVPs came up with Outlook Express is most of the MVPs answer thousands of newsgroup questions, NN2P newsgroup questions every month.
Exactly.
And so they live in it still, probably almost as much as they live in an email client.
Yes.
So we get a little passionate about it.
And understandable.
So anyway, so you're doing the interview. I could talk Outlook Express all day long.
I don't know. You know, I know this isn't exactly practical, but I heard something really interesting that you guys have a lot of really active customers outside of the U.S. that Outlook Express is like the email client for Japan, things like this.
Yes. So everyone thinks of us as a home email client.
Right.
But in Japan, a surprisingly large number of corporate customers use Outlook Express across their company. So
instead of Outlook Homes.
Yes. So Docomo, we've heard much or all of FedEx uses Outlook Express, and we've heard quite a bit of feedback.
And you get a different type of feedback from them than you would from, a home user?
Definitely. So we get some corporate requests that we have to come and refill. Like, they go off into SMIME and other more obscure cases that home users may not use every day. So, let me know when you should start going through the different areas.
Yeah, I mean, do it. Let's see what's Outlook Express, it's new, it's on Vista, it's called Windows Mail.
Yep, and the key name is Windows Mail. But we still do news, so just when you see Windows Mail does not mean we just don't care about news anymore, which some people have worried about. So, one of the new cool features we have is the new spam filter. So people know that there's a team in Microsoft that focuses on spam, and they built code that will go take email and spam, and they will go train with learning algorithms and generate filters. So this was first released on Hotmail on the server, and then it was released in Outlook. We are now including it in Windows, and Outlook Express will now use this filter on POP accounts and IMAP accounts to go filter spam.
So does that get updated, by the way? So
yes.
As Microsoft learns more about how to filter out spam,
yes,
how does it update then?
We have Microsoft update. Okay. We have like once a month or once every other month. So if it needs it once a month, we will do that. If it's not that necessary, then we will kind of taper off.
Cool. And are you including the anti-phishing filter as well?
We are not in... It's not in beta
2. Because I know IE has an anti-phishing filter. But
it's not in beta 2. We are very interested in it. So we will see.
So does this algorithm, does it continue to learn while the user is using it on the machine?
It doesn't. What we found is the best way to learn is to have the biggest set of data at Hotmail. So when email comes into Hotmail, they then have people, or kind of a process to take a very small number of them and get back to those users and kind of have them vote and say, was this spam or not? And then by having this raw data, they can then every single day, sometimes more than once a day, go train the algorithms to go use this huge amount of raw data and go train the filter. So in some cases, spammers want to go, like fighting spam, you want to go off and do blacklist with IP address and host names, and they can actually do that with this huge set of data, where if you go in the client, you almost are having a much smaller set of data.
It's a benefit to the user. They're getting the power of this huge, you know, corpus of data from all these users and they get the benefit of that on their little machine.
Yes. And the way to think about it is it's training across all Hotmails. So it's not just training on just your machine.
Right.
The idea is you're using the whole community to train. And what we, I like to joke about is that a lot of people talk about Bayesian filters. Like, we have algorithms that are much better than that. So we're not just another Bayesian filter. We're much better. Right. And for the user interface, we chose to just copy Outlook's user interface. That way the user interface is just the same old user interface to go enable it and turn it into...
You're talking about junk mail. The junk mail.
Yeah, the junk mail.
Okay. So, actually, could you start a little bit higher level and then diving right into spam?
Sure.
Is there any UI difference? You know, when I first start up Windows Mail and I'm an Outlook Express user, what am I going to notice that's different?
So, of course, the name change, and you will see there's whole new icons. Brand new icons across the product.
Okay.
What about the Vista style guidelines? I guess you guys are all plugged into that.
Yes, we're an application, so we're not really like the shell or more
sure.
IE, but and so in that sense we're different. So the spam feature is a whole set of UI that very much looks like the Outlook spam feature.
Okay, so that's all new.
And then the word wheel, which you'll see across Windows, is new. And this is really addicting for email. So you can come in and type in crash or fix.
So you're just typing in the box. And this works the same way the shell team showed us. We interviewed the
so
shell team.
So exactly. Are you actually using APIs from Vista itself to
yes,
implement this functionality?
Yes. So when you type in word wheel, it'll search not only the headers, but also the bodies. So it'll do a full index search. And as you type, you never hit enter. And here's a couple of things that are just really amazing about it. Is you, when you have your hands on the keyboard, you just hit Control E, and it brings your focus there. And then you can go type in a name. And then
so Control E was the...
Yes, Control E brings your focus wherever it is up into that box.
Okay.
And this is something we did, and it's now across Longhorn.
How does Windows decide if you have two screens or two windows on the screen with a search box?
It'll happen with whatever window you're in. So
okay.
If you're in the shell, it'll
whatever's
then go
topmost.
up into that window.
Got it.
And another aspect that we use a lot, when you use email, like this feature becomes addicting, I think, a lot more than a lot of other places. Like you just can't live without this feature once you start using it.
Yeah.
Another piece that's very, very handy is the escape key. So once you've filtered the list down to the set, you can use the escape key to go scope back to all emails.
Okay.
And then if you want to go back to your subset, to your search, you can hit escape again, and it toggles back to fill in the word wheel text and make your result set kind of shrink back.
Cool. Is the data store you guys are using, is it any different than the old Outlook Express data store?
Yes. So that's a huge change we made. And so what we've done is we used to have a database called DirectDB,
yeah.
Which was DBX files, and we've gotten rid of that completely. And we used to have a custom one-off database, and we decided to move to an operating system built-in database, which is Jet.
Mm-hmm.
And Jet is used across Windows Vista internally for Active Directory, the old help system, and a whole bunch of other processes.
So is there only one file I have to back up now? Or
yeah, so that's the word.
There's a lot more than one.
Okay.
So the way it works is we decided to take emails and actually instead of packing them into one database where we have to worry about fragmentation problems, we decided to just put each email into a separate file.
Okay.
So that way we don't have to deal with fragmentation on top of the file system. As files are added and deleted, then the file system naturally just garbage collects and compacts sectors very, very naturally, and you have disk blocking very naturally. So what we've done is we've taken the folder tree that you'll see, local folders, inbox, outbox, in each of your accounts, and we've made those folders in the file system, and then we've made each email message an EML file.
Okay.
And then we have newsgroup poster.nws files.
I have a question. So let's say I use Outlook Express for a while, and then I want to go and I don't know, I don't have Outlook Express for whatever reason. I just want to look at one email. Can I do that? Can I open it from the file system?
Absolutely.
Yes. You can come to the shell, and we'll show you that in a second. You can come to the open the shell up and do a search, and you can go search through and
so
find
I can
emails.
Actually search on emails almost like I could from Outlook. I can do it in the shell also.
Yes. So
that's Vista
Yeah, so you should think of the shell as the place you can go and you go search, and if you find, and if you end up finding, you go search for John and you find a couple of pictures, a couple of Word documents, a couple of emails as the results. It's all just natural. Just go to one shell and you find one search and you find everything. It's just a little bit.
Now, how does it work with the metadata? I know Vista supports a lot more metadata in the file format. Are you guys writing out metadata to the .eml files?
So the way we've laid that out is the file, the primary stream, is the RFC standard MIME. So if you open it up in Notepad, you can read it, and it's just it's internet standard.
Very cool.
We've then taken secondary stream and we put all the metadata there. So the account, the red on red, the flag, states.
Like this actually searches the secondary stream also.
Yes. So we have handlers, I filter handlers that you'll hear more and more about. Those get promoted up into JET and you can search. And so then you can go in the shell and pull columns for the accounts and so forth. And so this lets you go word wheel off those properties. And then if you go use the star and the ratings and the keywords to go type in the extra properties, we can then support taking those third-party properties we don't even know about and go adding them to the stream also. So if you go look at the secondary stream on these files, it's actually these properties packed in XML. So that way it's pretty open and transparent. And that's pretty much been our design, is make our files just open and transparent and very easy to deal with. And, you know, everybody jokes Microsoft's evil, but we're just trying to be very simple and very...
Yeah. I mean, this is great. This is kind of what, you know, the message is for Vista developers, though, right? You guys are leveraging, I mean, not only is it open, but you probably got a bunch of extra work done for you by the new Vista sort of organized APIs and all this kind of thing.
So here's some other interesting aspects, is we've taken our database, and now we have a new database which internally is using JET, which is a database in Windows, and has public APIs, and it's a fully transactional database. So if you lose power while it's writing an email message, it can reboot the computer and it can roll back that one transaction and your database is going to still have integrity.
Okay.
So the way this works is...
So there should be a lot less corruption stuff going on. Because I know MVPs would complain about that.
Yes.
I had that happen a couple times.
Yes, we've heard it loud and clear, and we've put a lot of time into fixing this. So we have three layers of kind of resiliency against corruption. So the first layer is having our database being transactional. So if you lose power while writing... Well, it's the disk is actually half written the data, and you lose power. When it boots back up, it'll see that transaction is half written, and it will roll it back. If you take the entire database and you just delete it verbatim, you just launch AliExpress the next time, and we will go walk the directories, and we will reconstitute the database. So we will just recreate it for you. In a couple of cases with IMAP, we will lose a couple of accounts that use a sync, so it'll. We have a way to kind of handle that data.
Right.
But otherwise, it really just rebuilds the database.
So the question, if you have all this stuff on the operating system or on the file system, why do you need an extra database? What does that do?
Speed.
The database is almost like a database of pointers to the file system.
Yes. So the database internally just has pointers to the file system for the primary MIME stream. But the rest of the data, things like what folder it's in, things like if it's read or unread, things like the subject, we store directly in the database. It makes it so we can render the view, you know, the standard view, extremely fast. It's when you click on a message, we go down, open the file, load it in, and display.
Yeah. So working with the list of folders and messages is all the database. We can make it really, really fast. And then the preview, it only loads one message at a time, so it makes sense to only... It ends up only working with one file at a time.
So it is a database pointer. I mean, in the end, the ultimate or the authoritative file store is still the operating system, and this database is a performance enhancement.
Yep.
So how do I back up AliExpress
onto another
machine?
Yeah, there's one third piece I want to talk about, and that's the backup database. So you know, the first level of protection is you can go delete the database and reconstitute it from the files.
Yeah.
The second level is it is transactional. And the third level is that we have a running backup. So that way, you end up having two copies of your headers, and that is in your main database, and then in this set of three files right here.
Yeah.
And that is a backup database and a series of log files. And so when it's running, those two mirror each other. And so if you have an error in any one of them, corruption in any one of them, it will use the other to go fix the error.
Right.
And it's actually very, very nice.
Right. But what folder do I need to copy onto another store?
Yes.
Because I've had this happen where my hard drive dies and all my email goes away and I have no backup. Right. So what do I need to actually copy to another
machine somewhere or put on a CD-ROM to back up my email.
It's the parent directory, which we call Windows Mail in Beta 2 and AliExpress in Beta 1.
Okay.
And that'll be the directory. You can just take that entire directory and just burn it to a DVD.
Okay.
And you go move to another drive. So it's very, very easy to take that whole thing. And our design is you can take the whole directory and just move it, and you're done.
Oh, really?
And then OE launches and goes, ooh, here's all our data, and just launches.
Ooh.
And
new feature. So I don't need to write registry keys and all that?
That's right.
And so, not only do you not need to write registry keys, but we also copied the account data. Previously, all the account data was held in the registry. Now we write it all out to disk. So you can see on Brian's board that we have the XML files holding the account information. So when you copy the entire directory, you copy all your account information at the same time.
And the internals of that is just XML. So if people can go off and go read the internals and see the account settings if they ever need to, go do that. So one thing that you might want to do is if you have a new machine, is you may actually just want to take, if it's like an IMAP account, you just drag and drop the account files and that's it. And then when you launch OE, it then just is all configured and then launches. And it just syncs your email down from the server. The one thing it does not bring over is your password.
Okay.
So that's encrypted, so when you bring that over, it'll prompt your password, put that in, and then you can just go from there.
Very cool. Now, you guys say everything's XML here. That means you have a new developer story, right?
Yes. Well, so OE has APIs. A lot of them that people just don't know about, so they're in the SDK, and they're documented, and so it's kind of good to know about those. And so from email side, we're not growing the APIs, but we're still supporting them. And it's the under the covers that we're making much more resilient and just open.
Very cool.
And so we also have iFilter and iProperty Store, which people can use to go read and write these files.
Very cool.
So
I have a question. You guys, Lua compliant, you guys are running securely and are the least user privilege.
Yep.
And is there a situation in which you had to elevate?
No, actually, we work very nicely. So we live under the documents and settings directory, and
yeah.
So in which case we just pretty much don't need to elevate almost ever.
Okay. Well, that's cool.
I don't think we have any elevations at all.
Yeah.
Module of bugs in current implementation.
It's a pretty big program, so you guys are running this whole thing, and it seems like it was pretty simple to do the Lua stuff. And
exactly.
We're just trying to get a feel for what other devs outside of Microsoft are going to have to deal with, running these applications on Vista. AliExpress is such a large, complex one. I figure you guys have run into some issues.
We're huge. We have our own database. We have networking down to Winsock. We have a lot of code.
Do you benefit from any of the Vista networking? Has that mostly stayed the same?
We're legacy apps. A lot of people that have applications that should ship should look at us and say, how did we work?
Right.
And the answer is we just have our code and we just ran. So for Lua, we actually were worried, what do we have to do? We just ran it, and it just worked. And we just, we're searching for bugs, and we just can't find any. So it's actually a testament to people who are standard Win32,
but
we use the Documents and Settings folder, and we use just Winsock. We can just run without any problems so far. So as long as you're not kind of going against a normal Win32 program, it works really nicely. That's awesome.
My data store in Outlook Express got pretty sizable after a while, because I was on 1,000 news groups and downloading every 15 minutes and all that fun stuff. After a certain point, it started falling apart, right?
Yeah.
The old one.
Yes.
How good is this new data store?
So one of our MVPs wanted to flog it in beta 1. And so he's downloaded to the point where...
Is this Tom?
No. Different MVP. He downloaded...
So I know Tom's crazy about Outlook.
This is Steve Cochran.
Okay.
And it went to the mail.dbx file. And it's gotten to 1.8 gigabytes. And that's not of email, that's just the headers.
Yeah.
So that's just the headers of the emails. And so another feature we have turned on is we have it so that way we have compression turned on.
Yeah.
So email files compress really, really nicely. So with the compression and TFS turned on, they just compress really nicely. We have some more features we can show.
Yeah.
So at some point I do want to talk briefly about any of the things you guys, especially to the dev and past, what they kind of went through making a Vista app. Did you face any particular issues, anything like that, or did you guys, what was it like developing for Vista? Was it a different experience than it was for the previous versions of Windows?
No. Primarily, we made some choices on the architecture for files as email.
Right.
And when we made those choices, a few things fell out. We had to do some shell integration work,
right,
which in the past OE was all just, you know, all its data was its own in its own file format. And now we are able to be found in shell. So we had to do some iFilter work to make sure things would display correctly.
Okay.
We had to do a little bit of registration work to make sure you could right-click on emails and choose reply or forward.
From the shell?
Yeah.
So from the shell, you actually have special actions you can take for...
Yeah.
Even the shell give you actions you can take from the shell that are like Outlook Express specific.
Yeah.
But even with Outlook Express open or anything, I can just click on this thing in the shell and I get my special verbs.
Yeah.
So we should show that.
Yeah.
So here's actually the shell, and the shell team is working on a better view than this. This is just kind of a temporary view. But here's...
Is this the PDC build, by the way? Or what build are we seeing here?
It's a little bit newer than that.
Okay.
So, but it shouldn't be materially different than that.
Okay.
So here is just a shell window, and we have the list of email messages, and we've turned on columns. So with iFilter and iProperty Store, we've been able to show the subject and the to name, the to address, and then here we can go off in Word Wheel. So we can go and have Word Wheel work in the shell, and we didn't have to do very much work at all. So with our application being able to take pieces of our data and turn them into files, they naturally appear in the shell. And so as long as we register the icon in the shell, then they show up in the iProperty Store and iFilter, then they work in Word Wheel,
yep,
and the columns. And then you can register some verbs with just normal file extension handling verbs, in which we added forward, reply, reply all. And you can just very easily have your email show up in the shell with not that much work.
This is really changing the way application developers might approach applications. It's almost like you don't have an application anymore. You just have files that you throw on the database.
You still have an application because you still need a customized experience for view.
Yeah.
You still need a customized experience for create. But your data is no longer just yours. Your data is part of the whole search experience, and just like ours is, you know, integrated across the entire system. So if you Word Wheel for something in the search box, you know, you'll come back with view, you'll come back with documents, come back with media, and that's just part of the natural experience. Everything's thrown together.
Well, it's kind of like you do have an application, and it kind of gets to be actually part of the game even more. Even while it's not around, the OS is willing to respect your application still being there. And, you know, your files aren't just a byproduct of your application anymore. They're actually an active and interactive part of your app. Just some cool stuff.
And it's also important to keep in mind that security is also part of the search as well, because if you have multiple users on the same system, even though they're files, all of the security is still there. So if I were an administrator, I wouldn't necessarily be able to search up all the emails that my power users have, right? So all of that is still in place.
So do you have to integrate that, the security functionality, or is this just how else Vista protects
them? As long as you live under the users directory, which each user has their own directory, and then works in very naturally. And then the search team has made it so that you have flags where you can flag your folder if you want it to be indexed or not. And there's various little things you can kind of just have very simple systems that way. If you're an application kind of like we are at high level, where you want to kind of focus your value in kind of your kind of vertical space, you can just kind of service your items as files and have the shell treat them very naturally, and then your application can focus your time there.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit, since you guys mentioned security, my mom is just freaked out about email. We've trained her sort of to not double-click on attachments and all that. Is that whole experience going to get better? Is it going to be a lot harder to get viruses
they said they're Lua compliant, so yeah, it's not a full protection, but it certainly helps that if a virus is executing, that means it's going to have a much harder time doing anything important on your system, right?
Yes. And then in XP, we switched over in XP2 to AES, which is a new public APIs in the shell that lets people that want to launch attachments go through a kind of a check that does additional checks. And virus scanners can plug in there, from my understanding. And so that way, that handles attachments being able to be handled nicely. And then we have the spam filter. And then phishing is something we're very interested in. And then going forward, we're interested in working very openly with antivirus software.
Very cool.
So we have two more features if you want to
see
them. So the next feature is often news groups. So we didn't leave our MVPs out.
Okay.
We have, what we've done is we've taken the main news group server, which is msnews@microsoft.com, that.microsoft.com, and actually added in by default, and we've named it Microsoft Help Groups.
Okay.
So then that way when they when every user launches it, they can then see it, just click on it, and just by default get to it. So we'll have a lot more people coming to the news groups, which is important.
Okay.
And when people go, they can then look at all the products Microsoft has, from Excel to PowerPoint, and just go choose the products that they care about, and then they can load those in.
Okay. So I can still add on my old Usenet news groups and all the weird groups I hang out in, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I won't go into that.
All the inappropriate news groups.
Where do you think I get my good spam? Yeah.
Exactly. So here's the new part. You'll see a new column here of icons. And so when you have users that come in this case it's Microsoft Money, and they can go post in questions and then have people come and answer them.
Right.
So here is a case of somebody went off and they posted a question that said, I need help formatting my checks to print out correctly in Microsoft Money.
Yeah.
And when they posted it, there's a way to mark the posts as what type. So it'd be like a question or a suggestion. And so this person marked it as a question. And then somebody else came along, and Dick Watson, and answered the question. And then what ended up happening with this rating system is that the user, Seth, that originally asked the question, came along and said that this one answer fully answered his question. And so what we have is it started off with having a question, this icon.
Yep.
And then when somebody replied, it came down here as an answer. And then once this user said that it actually answered his question fully, it added, turned the icon from this question mark into a check on top.
Oh, that's really cool.
Which means it's fully answered. So when someone expands the thread, they can see this big thread and say, if that's the same problem I have, I see the exact post that answers it. And we have a way to go off and rate. So users can come into a post and say that this post was helpful or not helpful.
So if 1,000 people read that message and 900 say it's not useful, it'll tell me in some way?
Yes. We'll have columns. They'll show you whether they're helpful or not helpful. And over time, when people post, they're using their password account to post, it will then build up their useful to unuseful ratio, and they will then become silver, bronze, or gold posters. And then that'll also show up in news groups.
Ooh.
So then you can
a new way to find MVPs.
Yes. So it's kind of like Slashdot. Like, if you want to take a big news group and say, I just want to filter down the stuff that's useful, people that are answering really good questions, you can then zoom it down. And then you can use WordWheel to say, hey, I'm using money, I'm having a printing problem with this, and you can just go use WordWheel.
Did you work with Microsoft Research on this?
This part, no, we didn't.
Okay, because I know Mark Smith is doing a lot of research on news group.
He's involved with this. The Office team, actually, when they built their last version of Chips, you can go to their help system, and not only does it give you their help, but it also goes off to servers that will pull the same data.
Okay.
So when Office users are asking questions or looking for help, they can come and read these same answers, and so people can come to this. The amazing thing with MVPs is if you come and you go post, 95% of the posts or so are answered within 24 hours.
Yeah.
So if anybody has a question, they can come and just post a question, and within 24 hours, pretty much every post is just answered. So it's an amazing way to come for any product. And if you want to look at the products we have for Microsoft, about 2,000 to 3,000 of them, they can come along and just pick the exact product that they care about and zoom in the right area that they care
about. Now, do these rating and question features only work with the Microsoft News Group servers, or do they work with all Usenet News Group servers?
They work with our main server,
okay. And
then the protocol is pretty open, but it ends up relying on passports. So if anybody implemented their own, they'd have to use passports.
Okay.
But underneath, it's just HTTP requests off to a server.
Okay.
You know, like when you return your NTP headers, you return the right set of GUI, and that will make some HTTP requests off to do the rating. So it's implementable as long as the auth is passport.
Very cool.
So the next area that's really, what we really have been having a lot of fun with lately is contacts. Is it in the past, the WAP has been this application that's been really old-looking and just very, very crusty, very 1995.
Actually, can we tell me what WAP is?
The WAP is the Windows Address Book. And so this is the address book in Windows and the one that AliExpress uses.
And the developer API, people are writing stuff against that?
Yes. So Microsoft money goes and stores their bill pays in there.
Public, yes. An ISV provider against it. Mm-hmm. Okay. I just want to...
It's been public since IE4.
Yeah.
And it shipped since probably 98 or even earlier.
Yeah, so basically I'm a noob. That's good.
So you can launch it in either the start menu or go click on the address book in Outlook Express.
Yeah.
And we've gotten rid of the application window, which looks very old and dated.
Oh, yeah.
And we've moved to the shell, so that way the shell has all your contacts. So here is
your address book.
What's this?
Yes.
The idea is don't build your own database. Just use files if they make sense as a user concept. They can go to the shell and they can search them. They can back them up individually. They can go copy them to thumb drives.
File.
Yes.
The extension is .contact. We're a
very simple. Yeah. We're a very simple team.
We try to.
We believe in
easy things.
Kiss engineering, keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah, which is the design. So, so the way this works is this is just a directory full of .contact files, and each file internally is XML. So here I'm going to force the file to go up and open in Notepad, and you'll just go see XML. We're cleaning up the XML tags right now, but you'll just see modification dates and somebody's address, and all the fields are inside. So...
So is this the info card?
This
technology?
Is not info card. It's like vCard properties, and then we transformed it into XML.
Okay.
So then that way we have XML that is much more resilient to having lists of properties, where vCards are pretty fixed on certain properties, and we make it very easy to have lists of those properties. And then third parties can come along to a contact and go use XML namespaces to go add in their schema onto that contact. So
yeah, there's more pieces there too, right? There's modification date, there's version numbers. It makes it so you can do things like write synchronization adapters. Everyone wants their cell phone next to their computer. We aren't solving that, but we're providing a simple platform to make it possible.
So that means that every time you change someone changes the contact, just the last name or just the phone number, we have version numbers on each individual property. It's not only a version number, it's also a time date stamp, and in collections we have unique IDs, so people can have fine-grained data at the storage level of how changes happen. So sync replicators can do multi-master sync, so anyone that does sync knows that if you don't have a single master that can resolve conflicts, you need this rich data to be able to resolve conflicts.
So this is a new thing on top of WAV. It's a replacement for WAV.
This is basically a replacement for WAV.
So it's WAV.
This is the new WAV.
So it's WAV.
Same interfaces. So same API.
Okay, so the API is actually the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just the underlying. So if I have written an application against WAV for XP or before, now it's all of a sudden going to just get this goodness.
Yes.
Oh, that's freaking awesome.
Your old application will work. That's the entire
ball. That's awesome.
So here's how it works. Is if applications are calling the legacy APIs, they call our new APIs internally, and then we go right to the database. So the database is entirely new. It used to be a .wav file. Now it's a directory full of contacts. And then the APIs are basically kind of like a DOM on top of that file, so they can read and write that file. And then we made the legacy APIs just go sit on top of that, so that way all these legacy applications just flow on through.
A good example of a legacy app is Outlook Express.
Yes.
So we have a fairly good test application.
So we decided not to even convert a lot of Outlook Express and just go through the legacy APIs. And then for some of the contact UI I'll show you in a second, they come through some of the newer APIs. And that's where we want the people coming through the new APIs tend to be people who want to do synchronization and get the full data to do a really good synchronization, or applications that want to have a schema above and beyond the current WAV schema.
Okay.
Part of our goal is that applications can, with contacts, they want to have data that we can't even imagine and put it in the contacts. And so with XML schema, they can safely go off and append it to an application section or go tie it to individual email addresses or phone numbers or physical addresses.
Okay.
So when it comes to the file, you can just double-click on that .contact and our application launches, which is web.exe. And then we show our application, and so we've made a few changes to the user interface, like a user picture, and then you can see a summary tab of all the data. You can go click on somebody's website to go launch it. And then some of the tabs we've made newer and improved, so you can go change a user tile. And some of the tabs in the web we've just kept the same. So it's the same old tab.
Okay.
And then here in the shell, you can see that the shell benefit is that we've used the iFilter and iProperty store again to then go surface the properties in the shell. So that way they're searchable and they're viewable in the shell.
Very cool.
So another thing is you can then go off and go synchronize your contacts very simply. So some people can go back them up by bringing them to DVD. You can go have simple file copying software to go sync them to a thumb drive. And it's just very, very simple to...
So that's the question. How would I transfer contacts from, you know, one P by Hello PC to my work PC?
Well, so there's two easy ways. You can copy them to a CD, just direct. You put them on the... Burn them to a CD.
From the directory that they're in? Or, I mean, these are just files.
Right-click. Send to CD. send the entire directory.
It's simple, I think. I'm just complicating for you.
Yeah, that's okay. Now, there is a question, which is, you know, how do I send it to from my home PC that's Longhorn to my work PC that is XP? And that addresses a problem that we have, which is we need to be able to have a downloadable format. And so we have a right-click option where you attach it to an email, like you're going to send an email to yourself that will down-convert to BCF.
Oh,
and
wow.
So then your XP machine will be able to read the data and have all the data there.
And what if I were to do it the other way around? What if, I keep my contacts at work on my XP machine and I went out and got a new, Vista machine? Because, you know, you want to go get new Vista machines.
Everyone needs to go get a new Vista machine.
But if I did
get
that,
two.
Can I take those? Can I do it the other way around?
Yeah.
Can I import them as VCF?
Yeah, you bring in the VCFs. You email them to yourself, double-click on them, open up in web. Click Add to Contact, or Add to Address.
So these are stored on where are they stored on the file system?
On the disk, underneath the user profile.
Underneath the user profile, in the same place. But, I mean, I see slash.
Slash contacts.
So we'll have contacts. Slash contacts.
And it'll be a...
Sorry.
Yeah. It'll be
we make things really hard.
It'll be a peer of your My Pictures, My Documents, and right there will be contacts. And so those directories will be right there. And so inside of there will be your master address book. But if people want to go off and have Project X, Project Y folder somewhere else, they can go and they can use right-click and use new to go add a contact or a group. And so they can go create one anywhere. So if they have a Project X and they have a contact for that project, they may choose to store the contact in that location. And so here are the groups. So the user interface for groups are very similar to the old WAB. And internally, we really kept the old code going through legacy APIs. But then they then surface off in the shell.
Very cool.
Let's see.
Much nicer.
One case for synchronization, the best synchronization built into Windows and Windows 2000 was offline files. So you can take your laptop and go look at a UNC path and mark the entire directory structure on UNC as offline files.
Yeah.
And then we'll synchronize them to your laptop or whatever. So then you can go see and edit those files offline. And so this is a case where this could work just fine for contacts, where people can go make them offline, they will synchronize on both sides, and we don't actually do any work for it. We just take advantage
of... Because they're files, it's just like synchronizing any other type of file at this point. Do you get that same benefit for mail?
Yes.
That's cool.
With mail, it's a little bit more difficult because if you have a big, massive database, if you have changes on both sides, it's harder to stitch them together. Although we could actually see the files being separate, and then the database, if it was smart enough, we can actually like see the files having read and unread states different on both sides and try to stitch them together. But with contacts, it's really, really easy if you don't need that index. So to generate this list, it's actually Windows internally with their search, they have the JET database, and they actually use your iProperty store and iFilter to go pull in the properties, and then they keep the index. So when it comes to going to this folder, they just go look in that index and can go render the view really fast.
Right. We haven't talked much about how Outlook Express performs on weird wireless networks, right? Because I'm using a Bluetooth phone when I go on vacation, and it's 50 kilobits per second, pretty slow speed. Is there a way to manage better what it's pulling down? So, you know, if Joe sends me a 2 gigabyte, video or something, button or 2 megabyte video. it doesn't sit there for half an hour downloading his picture. Has that experience gotten better?
With everything we're doing, we've been focusing on this work. Because email was designed back in 1995 when modems were being in heavy use, it's always already pretty much optimized for modem and low bandwidth use. So we just try to keep that behavior the same. And then off in the future, after Vista, we can then think about going into the next wave of what we want to do.
Okay. And how's the performance overall?
It's been... It's slowed down with bandwidth.
You just got the answer.
It's been a little rough.
Beta 1's been laughable, and Beta 2, we actually didn't spend any time on perf. And then Beta 2, we're actually coming in and doing serious passes at perf. But... this is the thing.
That's
where
your job, right?
That's right.
It's a lot better.
I can testify it has gotten much faster.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those things that you pick up.
What were you guys doing to make it faster? I mean, why was it slow?
So the problem is DirectDB uses a memory map file. So when you use a memory map file and you have no kind of transactioning, it's very fast and loose and just easy to be very light and fast.
At some point, eventually, you lose your data, but hey. It was fast until you lost it.
When you guys added a lot.
Then you wasted it.
Then you lost it all.
So we have to do
I've been there, believe me. I'd rather have slow and reliable.
How to focus more on reliability at first, and then your tackling is perfect.
So we just map it into a normal relational database, and then we go and focus on optimizing the tables and then the read patterns, and then that's where our efforts going on now to make very fast improvements.
Did you have...
No, Brian's exactly right. So just recently with the performance, what we did was we just optimized the way that all the entries were stored in the database. So when we queried, before we were storing things that were unnecessary. So we've taken a lot of that out, and it's gone much faster.
This brings up a good question. We're in testing phase, right?
It's always testing phase.
There's always testing. Well, hopefully at some point the testing stops, right? But what kinds of feedback do you want to hear from MVPs or people who are trying out the new Outlook Express for the first time?
Play with the features and let us know.
Yeah. Well, is there some areas that you really like feedback on, or something that do you have a homework project for them?
Well, I mean, from the test perspective, Lee, when you've been testing stuff, I mean, what's been what's been the sore point?
What's the sore point?
Yes, we need to say that.
Maybe you see the thing in Shell. You know, there are no bugs in Vista. Right, did you see the poster? They have a poster up. It says there are no bugs in Longhorn Vista.
And so it's all your product, huh?
It's there are no bugs in the product.
Yeah.
It's on the wall there.
Most of the sore point comes from because we took over Outlook Express. This team took over Outlook Express just about a year ago. We're really just revamping the entire application. So we're adding a lot more support from Lily, and we're adding all these new features. So really the sore point is where we're taking this product that hasn't been supported for a while, and we're just adding everything on top of it. So it's everything, not one specific feature. It's just a lot of regression testing.
This is a huge product, so if people can find bugs, please file them. We want to hear them. We want to make sure we can see the entire list and work through them. Yeah. So by all means, use the desktop icon and go file bugs. We want to go see all of them.
We do read those.
Yes.
We get all of them.
You actually read them?
We get the reports.
Yeah. We read
everyone. Bags on your eyes, Tommy. You do. It's not joking there.
So the build in PDC has a lot of the refinements and context are not there. It's about halfway. So PDC is kind of a rough build in some of this. But then the real Longhorn Beta 2 build will be really, really nice, especially in the context area.
Yeah.
In particular for context, the file format will change. So if somebody takes a hard dependency on it, don't do that on a PVC context file format.
And please use the APIs instead of reading the file directly. It's XML because we want to be open, but we also request that people go through the APIs. If you come through the APIs, there's database locking benefits. We add the version numbers and time date stamps on top. So if you modify the XML directly, you won't get any of these benefits, and you can kind of lose some data with the same.
Oh, that's good to know, because that's what I was hinting at before. Now that you have XML, developers love to go in and manage the files.
Well, right? So there's a reason we made the APIs, right? They're going to provide an easier solution for COM programmers. They're going to do some things for you automatically. You aren't going to go and torque someone else's data that they've extended in the file format.
Right? You really talked about writing. What about reading? Could I just read the XML file?
Sure.
You're going to do the same thing that we do in the APIs, only you're going to have to rebuild it.
Yeah. And you're less resilient to change, so it's just easier to use the APIs. And so we make the file format open, and what we request is just please write with the interfaces. That way we can make sure we validate data and keep integrity for the next application that's going to read and write the data.
You want a bunch of news group posts saying, I've been writing this XML for a month. I'm reading this break.
Yeah, exactly. Anything cool? Anything else that if one of the MVPs was here, you would be proud of or showing them?
We have a few things, but we can't really talk about them quite yet.
Okay.
So we have a couple of things up our sleeve for
We'll sign later. The NDA. I mean,
yeah.
Cool.
So we have some more.
And if an MVP was here, what kinds of questions are you getting from the MVPs who've seen it for the first time?
The MVPs, especially the OE MVPs, want to walk through all the detail of the database. We have all these scenarios where the agent can corrupt this, that, or the other thing, and we can recover it. And so we're going to walk through all of that with the MVPs, especially the OE MVPs. The features for the newsgroups will have a lot more people coming to the newsgroups because it's just in Windows by default.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of users just clicking on it and coming through. So the volume will go up, and we have ideas on how to make sure that the noise, the signal ratio does not go out of control. And so during the MVP summit, we will work with the MVPs to kind of show them some really creative ideas we have to make this be a net big positive for MVPs.
I'd like to know that. On Channel 9, our noise goes up, and it's like, got to start deleting people, you know, or banning them and say, hey, you're in jail for a week. You know?
Exactly.
You've been a bad boy. So, well, thanks. Anything else? Any other questions?
No. I mean, I think it. I appreciate it. And it's actually good to see a real big, robust, sensible kind of working product running on Vista. So I think there was a question. So it's good to see you guys doing what you're doing. It's cool.
Yep. Thanks.
It's fun.
Thanks, I'm looking forward to playing with it.
That's fun. Is that the new part?
Yeah. It's pretty inspiring.
It's clear and confident, right?
Yeah.
But it's fun. Okay, thanks.